Shame and guilt. In this skin, we experience shame and guilt, and it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to all of us. What you think shame is, what you think guilt is, what I think shame or guilt might be. So let's start easy this morning, because it's a big and heavy topic. Let's start easy. We asked a few of you this week to share with us your guilty pleasures. You're not gonna recognize the people on the screen.
My guilty pleasure is making and eating large amounts of pizza. I was gifted a pizza steel last year for Christmas, and ever since then, it's just been downhill. It's an obsession, it's an addiction. I need help. Please help.
My guilty pleasure is coffee and chocolate.
My guilty pleasure is sitting in my bathroom in the morning doing online crossword puzzles and drinking my mug of coffee.
My guilty pleasure is cooking.
My guilty pleasure, it's potatoes. In any way, shape, or form, I can get them. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, be fine with me.
My guilty pleasure is Gossip Girl. I love watching Gossip Girl and eating pasta or popcorn or anything, and I can watch it all day.
I like to sneak away with my husband on his trips and leave those children behind.
My guilty pleasure is binging West Wing on Netflix.
BMW enthusiast, and my guilty pleasure is enjoying the Porsche experience.
My guilty pleasure is candy, probably licorice, which is probably not the best.
My guilty pleasure is consuming too much caffeine in all kinds of great, flavorful, delicious coffee drinks.
My guilty pleasure is Mexican candy. I gotta say that spicy, sweet, bitter, sour, salty combination is just, it's to die for it.
My guilty pleasure is sitting down with a big bowl of salty popcorn and eating the whole thing by myself.
My guilty pleasure is watching movies.
My guilty pleasure is getting massages. And as you can see, I'm at it. Massage place right now.
Es ist die dritte Tasse Kaffee.
My guilty pleasure is ice cream.
My guilty pleasure is Pop-Tarts.
With popcorn, peanut butter pretzels, and ice cream. Organic ice cream.
I feel very guilty every time I give in and have a Dr. Pepper.
My guilty pleasure is, I think it's Facebook.
My guilty pleasure is arguing with people on Facebook.
My name is Peter Kress, and my guilty pleasure is sweetened breakfast cereals. We never had the sweetened breakfast cereals in the house when I was growing up, but once a year we'd go to camp meeting, and my mom would always pack the single-serving boxes. So once a year we got to have Fruit Loops or Frosted Flakes or Lucky Charms. Now, as an adult, I don't eat those at home, but when I go on a road trip, I make sure I'm well supplied.
My guilty pleasure is watching Dr. Pimple Popper on YouTube.
My guilty pleasure is, along with my healthy fats that I have every day, dark chocolate. But it has to be dark.
Chocolate.
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 White chocolate.
Mon péché mignon, c'est le chocolat.
Chocolate ice cream.
My guilty pleasure is chocolate chips.
I've been told this is my guilty pleasure, although I don't really feel guilty about it.
And we all need counseling. We all need counseling. Kevin Strain, I'm pretty sure your guilty pleasure is not getting a haircut after seeing your picture today. Hey, enjoying a little too much of something and feeling a little bit badly about it. It's called a guilty pleasure. There is one author for The New Yorker who says, actually, guilty pleasure is a linguistic remnant of the 20th century and we should get rid of it from our vocabulary. either do your thing and enjoy it, or don't do your thing so you don't have to feel guilty. Agree, church, or disagree? Agree? Or would you like to think about it over coffee and chocolate and Pop-Tarts? To tell the truth, how many of them looked guilty to you? I mean, really. Okay, so we're going to pick on two of our church members. Zane, we're picking on you, our pizza friend. This is Zane Yee. He usually attends this worship service, professor of religion. None of that matters because watch his eyes. Zane's got the guilty thing going on.
And my guilty pleasure.
Yes.
Is making and eating large amounts of pizza.
Zane's got it. Is anybody listening? Am I gonna get caught? Pizza. And then he says, and I need help. He asked for help. I also found Arden Bauman persuasive. Look at how kind of somber his face when he confesses.
My name is Arden Bauman, and I feel very guilty every time I give in and have a Dr. Pepper. My dental hygienist says it's bad for my teeth. My wife says it's bad for my health. But unfortunately, it makes me feel great, so I just give in and do it.
Just honest, a little somber, frown on his eyebrows there, right? Guilty pleasure, a little bit of too much of something that we enjoy a little more than we ought to, and it's probably not a problem unless we get caught. This is not what we're talking about today. When the psalmist in Psalm 51 stands before God and says, "Cure me of my guilt," the psalmist is not speaking of Pop-Tarts and organic ice cream and indulgences and small pleasures in life. When the psalmist, Psalm 51, stands before God and says, "Cleanse me of my guilt," the psalmist is dead serious, friends. It's a psalm of 19 verses, and we might not know it all 19 verses, but I'll bet we know verse 9 right in the middle. "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit. Cast me not out of your presence." Many of you memorized that when you were younger. That's right down in the middle of Psalm 51 as the psalmist steps into the sanctuary and cries out for help. I've been persuaded as I have read this psalm of a few things. The scholars tell us, the experts say, this is probably this psalm read and prayed more often in Christian worship over the centuries and generations than any other psalm in our Bible. Because this particular psalm is read every Ash Wednesday for Protestants and Catholics as they go on the Wednesday 40 days before Easter weekend and get the ashen cross placed on their forehead. This particular psalm is read after communion every Sunday in some traditions. This particular psalm is sung often in worship services, and it's one of the rotating prayers for forgiveness in most liturgies. Very well worn, which tells us that the words of Psalm 51 have traction in our Christian tradition. These words have been in our minds for centuries. Psalm 51, edited and touched up a few times, by the time we read it, it begins this way: "Have mercy on me, God, according to your faithful love. Wipe away my wrongdoings according to your great compassion. Wash, purify." The psalmist cries out for God to do something. Do a God thing right now. Be God, do God. I need you right now. Several ways that the psalmist asks for forgiveness. 6 different words the psalmist uses multiple times. 4 different ways the psalmist says, "I sin, transgressions, And again and again, the psalmist talks about the sin in this chapter. Walking straight into worship, looking up towards the Creator and confessing, "This is me." This is Psalms 51. One author summarizes, we could say of Psalm 51, we can say it in three words, I have sinned. That's the summary of all 19 verses. Someone else says, actually, we could call this psalm simply the cry of a broken heart. Or another thinker says, this psalm is like pushing a kid under a cold shower. And they just scream out, help, 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 I need help. Psalm 51, in the middle of our Bible. I want to suggest to you this morning as we think about shame and guilt in this skin, we feel shame and guilt. A lot of it is not healthy, but I want to name a couple of healthy movements in Psalm 51. It is tremendously healthy that a creature can come before the Creator and say, honestly, I did a thing and it wasn't so good. It's very helpful for us to take responsibility and very difficult. Tell me in your home, who confesses fault first? Is it you? Like, this is one of the hardest things to teach children and to teach families. There's something so beautiful walking into God's space, knowing you're safe enough to say to God, I did a few things and they didn't resemble you and I need to say I'm sorry. That's beautiful. To name it, to take responsibility for it. It's also beautiful that it happens together. For while the psalm says, I, it's really meant to be experienced together as we. In the Old Testament, there is no such thing as just private sins. Every wrongdoing has community consequences, community ripple effects. So that even this psalm, if you have a Bible open, Psalm 51 has a little introduction that says that this one is probably for King David, the time when Nathan told him, hey, that thing you did with Bathsheba was wrong. Oh, we're going to talk about that story in a couple of weeks. It's interesting that the editor of the Psalms has added this little thought. It's as if to say, I could imagine King David prayed this psalm when he got caught with Bathsheba and killed her husband, and you know that mess. But actually, I just told you, the way the psalm has been used in Christian tradition is all of us reciting it together. Like we sit together shoulder to shoulder and say these words out loud. We're going to put the verses on the screen today, and I'm going to ask you to read all of us together. This is really more what it sounds like and feels like, Psalm 51. Have mercy on me, God. You have to say it now. You have to say it while you're sitting among people. I'm going to come down with you because I'm not on a different playing field than you. We have to say it together in the middle of our stuff and whatever the week has been like. We come to worship and this is what we say. Have mercy on me, God, according to your faithful love. Wipe away my wrongdoings according to your great compassion. Wash me completely clean of my guilt. Purify me from my sin, because I know my wrongdoings, my sin, is always right in front of me. I've sinned against you, you alone. I've committed evil in your sight. That's why you're justified when you render your verdict completely correct when you issue judgment. Yes, I was born in guilt, in sin, from the moment my mother conceived me. You want truth in the most hidden places, wisdom in the most sacred space. Purify me with hyssop, and I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Purify me, I will be clean. Wash me, and I will be whiter than snow. Can you imagine gathering in worship every week, and this is what we say together? This is what we say together. There's no I, there's only us and we, and how my wrongdoings impact you and your family and vice versa. There's something very beautiful about this. Together, a community speaking and crying out to God for help. Something very beautiful in the ritual of knowing you could come to the temple, wash me with hyssop, get the herbs and clean me, or like a piece of dirty laundry, just wash me in water with lots of detergent, and I promise everything, make it all come out clean. Concrete, real movements that people would go through. Part of the beautiful thing in the Old Testament, you would do that and you could walk away and go have your hamburger. It's kind of beautiful. Friends, it's very beautiful. But then there is this verse that I want to call attention to, because this part is not so beautiful. I believe this goes to the core of guilt and shame and what we need to address this afternoon. Psalm 51, verse 5. I was born in guilt, in sin, from the moment my mother conceived me. We read it together. There's only a few times in Scripture where we humans are described this way, as born in sin and guilt from the moment of conception. I want to name this afternoon the trouble with interpreting the passage as we are actually all born in original contamination, filth, sin, trouble. I want to name the reality, original sin is how some denominations teach this, that something happens at the time of sex, procreation, birth, and what comes out in little babies are babies born into, in the service of sin and wrong. Guilty, sinners, all the language, but most importantly, in the service of sin, they actually belong to the dark side, we could say. That this is where shame and sin and sexuality and guilt all get mixed together. Oh, this will come up again in the next couple of weeks too. Misunderstanding texts like this in the Bible is part of what has led in the Christian tradition to our shame and guilt with sexuality and our bodies. Because this idea came early in our tradition that it is in the act of sex and giving birth and new babies and here, this is what guilt and sin and ugliness produces. Original sin. This is very different than what we teach in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and particularly in this congregation, and I want to name today the difference. The difference between being born into sin and stained by sin and claimed by sin, and what we teach, that we inherit weakness. Oh, we inherited the fracture, the cracked, the fallen story of Adam and Eve, absolutely, but we are all created in the image of God. In the image of God, you're moving around the world today, fractured, weakened, inherited this story, absolutely. But we are not children of the dark, we're children of the light. Our children, teenagers, young adults, you need to know the difference. This is what we teach here. So it is why in some traditions when babies are born, we are quick to scoop them up and baptize them, take care of their sinful condition in case they die. We don't want them to go to purgatory or hell or lose them, so we baptize them quickly. This is not how we think about it here. I don't think it's what the psalmist means. I think the psalmist rather means, look, if we look through history, we can see some things. Human beings have a propensity to make bad decisions. If we look through the history, we can see some things that there's a problem with sin in our world. But I don't think the psalmist is saying, and therefore we are all born in service to sin. It's careful that we name this afternoon, friends. Sinners versus children of God. We had an argument about this one year in the Sabbath schools downstairs. I remember in the lower level, one of the Sabbath school teachers who was upset with me that I would not let her call the children sinners to their face, like, good morning, sinners, kind of language. Would you come back, by the way? No, we're not calling the children sinners. Well, but they are, because the Bible says that they are. We're not calling people sinners. Fractured, broken, a propensity towards trouble, wrong decisions, but we're not labeling. These are children of the light, not the dark. Friends, this is a huge distinction. We're born into a predicament, but we're not the predicament. I'm not the predicament. You're not the predicament. This is the distinction now when we start to talk about shame and guilt. Stay with me a little bit longer because because of how heavy this is and how serious this is, Rabbi Harold Kushner helps us, I believe, in a book entitled, How Good Do We Have to Be? If you want to read a book, read this one. You only have to do the first couple of chapters and put it down. I think you got what you needed out of the book. How good do we have to be? Kushner says we actually need to go very back to the beginning with the Eden story with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and ask ourselves, how is it we're telling that question? What are we born into? Because the way we tell the question will set up the rest of the scenario. So, Adam and Eve, here's a picture from about 300 AD, Roman. This is during the Roman era, and these are in the catacombs where people painted artwork, right? In the catacombs. One of the few PG-13 Adam and Eve pictures I can show you. Kushner says that if we imagine the Adam and the Eve story this way, as a story of misbehavior and punishment in God's world, that we'll have a predictable outcome. That means, a story of misbehavior means God had ideals, perfect behavior was God's request of us. We're not able to do it. Adam and Eve were not able to do it. And therefore, they are guilty and inadequate. They live in shame. They're cast out of the garden. They are forever now involved in a life of wrongdoing and trying to measure up and continually not pleasing God. And these will be the characteristics, the qualities of their life with God. I'm not enough. I can't measure up. I keep making wrong decisions. I'm inadequate for God. If we tell our Adam and Eve story this way as a story of misbehavior and punishment in God's world, Kushner says that this is an attractive way to tell the story, because we all tend to focus on our wrongdoings. Have you noticed that about yourself? You can remember the wrong stories quickly in your life, can't you? We forget the good things, but we're very quick to remember the bad things we've done. When I remember elementary school, I remember fifth grade, and I remember going to the teacher's desk and rigging it up from the backside so the hinges wouldn't work, so that when he sat down and he pulled his drawer out, it would spill all over the floor. That's terrible. I didn't actually do it. I was with the kids that did it. No, we all did it. When I think about elementary school, I think about that. I think about putting Elmer's glue in the girl's Twinkie and faking her to eating it, and she's eating glue in front of all of us, and we're laughing at her. It's terrible. Kushner remembers a spelling competition he was in as a little child, and he couldn't spell the word judgment. And to this day, when he sees the word judgment in print, he just, I'm an idiot. We have a propensity to think about our lives this way, as misbehaving creatures. Rabbi Kushner suggests we think about the Adam and Eve story a different way, church. That instead of misbehaving creatures, that we are a story on the complexity of being human in God's world. That there's a very, very large difference. And then when God places Adam and Eve in the garden and he asks them, stay away from this fruit, the fruit of this tree is off limits. And that when they were not able to do that, the complexity of being human, a conscience that comes alive, reality and consequences, that's all very real. That is a different story. Remember in this part of the story, before this happens, the Bible says they are naked and not ashamed. You know that language? And then after this incident with the apple, they put on clothes and they hide. But pay very careful attention when God comes to them. What is it that God says? Hey, why'd you pick the fruit? Hey, get your hands off of the trees. Hey, you fill in the blank, name calling God. You fool, you're wrecking the story, you're ruining creation, you've messed it up for everybody. Does God say any of that, church? What does God say? Where are you? Why are you hiding? Who told you you were naked? Another word for being ashamed. Who put that idea in your head, God says? Who told you were those kinds of creatures? Who told you didn't belong to me? Why are you hiding? Come here. We're in this together. Do you see the difference, church? The way we think about our story from the very beginning matters. I'm persuaded with Rabbi Kushner that the story of complexity and pain and wonder and potential is actually more biblical. It actually also makes more sense. So this is where Brené Brown comes in and is helpful to distinguish what I just said in very practical terms. When we say, I am bad, we're talking about shame. Shame says, I'm bad. I'm inherently bad. I am the predicament. I am the problem. As I stand here in front of you today, I am not enough. I am not good enough. I have problems that can't get solved. I'll never be good enough for God. That is shame's voice. But the other voice that says, I did bad, is guilt. And they're very different. And we need to know the difference, and we need to know the difference in our families, and we need to know how to talk about this. In this skin, we do feel shame. Shame has voices in our heads. We don't have a lot of time this afternoon to distinguish that, but Brené goes on to say, pay attention to those voices of shame. What are they? Where do the messages come from? Because we're not hardwired to silence those voices on our own. We'll need help. What are the messages of shame that come to you? Remember, I had said earlier last Sabbath when we began this conversation, show me the table that raised you. Show me the family where you were born. And that will be the beginning of the answer to these questions. The country where you were raised, the language that you spoke, the presence or absence of religion, the traditions swirling around. Were some of you here last week? We said, show me your table. Well, we can begin to answer the questions. What are the voices for shame and guilt? I showed you a picture of my family's table. Northern European. A little shy on the warm fuzzies. So happens that my cousin Carol is here today. Hey, Carol, you're in this picture. I told them last Sabbath that I'm not old enough to be in the picture. A little shy on the warm fuzzies. A little heavy on the discipline. This is our grandmother that I've spoken about here before, who would pray in the back bedroom of our house with the door open, and she would pray loud enough so we could hear her pray, oh Lord, bless my grandchildren. The boy's hair too long. The girl's skirt's too short. Right, Carol? Am I telling the truth? Tell me the table that raised you, and we have the beginning of the voices in our heads, friends. Brené Brown suggests to us then to dig deep into that and to sit still with that and to visit shame and those messages, because there are alternatives. The alternative to shame is to make space for pain. This is the alternative, because shame messages that say, I'm not enough, I'm off, something's wrong with me, means I don't fit in and I never will. Well, there's pain behind that. So Brené says, make room for the pain. Actually make room to say, it doesn't feel good when I don't get picked for the team. It doesn't feel good when I can't be in the orchestra. It doesn't feel good when I don't get a date. It doesn't feel good when I don't have a successful, long-lasting relationship. It's painful that I couldn't step in and solve the problem for my friend or my brother or my sister. It's pain when I couldn't fight off my aggressor or my abuser. It's pain when I couldn't conquer mental illness. It is pain when my friends and my peers laugh at me and ridicule me because I don't have what they have. It is pain when my parents don't know how to throw their arms around me, love me, and pull me close. Brené Brown says, the alternative to shame is to make room for the pain and to name it. There's many of us walking around the room who can't, the world, who aren't able to do this, and so we medicate, and we medicate with drugs, alcohol we'll talk about next week, we medicate with food, we medicate with work, we medicate with technology, because there's pain associated with shame, and we've not been able to name it yet. I want you to know very clearly today before you leave that in our Bible story, in our great salvation story with God, there is no room for shame. Shame does not belong. You cannot find it in Genesis 1 and 2 or even 3. Friends, shame needs to go. thank you. Then we could talk about guilt, because guilt actually can be productive for us. Guilt can be the thing that calls me to accountability, that says I need to handle something. I need to apologize. I need to rethink that. I need to imagine how I would do it differently better. I need to interrogate guilt, let it interrogate me, and then I need to draw a line on it. This is not easy for any of us, friends. It's not easy for any of us. The old voices will come back and they'll get mixed all up. Is it shame or guilt? Why do I feel bad? Why do I feel like I'm running from God? Why do I feel... We, your pastors, sit by the bedside of dying people who still think they are not savable for God's future. It is shame and it is guilt. Do you remember when I showed you this doll a couple of years ago? I think every time we talk about shame, she's coming to the party. I know now a baby cries. Do you remember when I showed you this doll? I know, it just creeps you out. Because she has a little, well, her privates are covered. She has a little place where you twist her up and then her head will go like this and she'll make music. She used to be very beautiful. She used to be fully clothed and had a whole head of hair, huh, Bon? I don't think she has a name but doll. Doll is perfect to me. I don't know doll has problems until everyone begins to laugh at me for my doll. I don't know doll is an issue until I see everyone else's dolls, friends. And this is our life with each other. So we can ask ourselves as we conclude this morning, what are the ways we can help each other with these messages? What are the ways we can speak something more positive into each other's lives? Maybe we can get rid of the word perfect forever. God didn't ask for perfection in the Eden story. Did you notice that? God calls us very, very good, not very, very perfect. Maybe we all need to start buying the imperfect produce this week. Have you seen this? Ugly produce. You can buy it. Carrots that are crooked and cucumbers that are squirrely and potatoes with two heads and oranges with blemishes. It's called ugly produce. We have two children in our family who eat ugly produce every week now. It's got my attention. Their tagline is, because we like to eat ugly. We don't need perfect produce. Tastes good. It's organic. It's cheap. Well, there's a lesson in there, right? What are the messages we could be working on together, church family? Can I show you a beautiful movement that happens in Psalm 51? This is brilliant. The psalmist at the beginning cries out, have mercy, wash me, all my wrongdoings. And the psalmist goes on and on and on about the past life, everything that's gone wrong, the consequences. And then the psalmist says again down in verse 9, wipe away all my deeds, thy guilty deeds. Guilty deeds don't come up again for the rest of the psalm. From verse 9 all the way to verse 19, the psalmist never looks back. We don't go back and rehash it. We don't go back and think it over again. We don't go back and say, but are you sure, God? We don't go back to a person and, are you sure? Did you accept my apology? From verse 9 on, the psalmist draws a line on it. It's done. This is Jesus in our midst who says, I did not come into the world to condemn, but to give you life. Now get on with your life. The most beautiful movement happens right there in the psalm. So church, draw a line on it. Whatever it is, it's shame. I know. It's some guilt. I know. And today, we can draw a line on today, and you can walk clean in God's world and live. Amen.